Right now, college campuses are often criticized for promoting political correctness, choosing words or policies so as not to offend groups of people, or providing unfriendly climates for particular perspectives. A writer in the National Review last month said political correctness is, quote, oozing out of campuses, stifling democracy, and, quote, creating a less free, less civil, less tolerant society. Our next guest says there's a bigger problem on college campuses: racist threats and harassment directed at faculty, especially at women and people of color. Trissy McMillan Cottom is an author and assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University. Trissy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, you wrote in a recent piece about your own and other people's experiences with harassment and threats, and you say it often follows a common thread. Can you talk through what's happened to you and your colleagues?
Sure. So we are now maybe in the third or fourth year where I think a couple of things have converged for those of us who teach and do research for a living in the American university. So the first is, you know, there's just been a change, I think, in the overall political discourse. You know, some of that driven by partisanship, sort of extreme partisanship, perhaps. People sense that they cannot have sort of a direct effect on their political climate. So I think people are feeling very disaffected. At the same time, we have seen over the last 40 years the face of the academy change significantly. So people get sort of this idea, somewhat true, maybe not as true as people would like to believe, that professors have become, it's less common for us to see the professoriate as being overwhelmingly white or male. And so that diversification of the American academy has happened. And then the other thing that has been happening over the past few years is that technology has just made it increasingly efficient to target, identify, and coordinate a response to or an attack on professors that people may not think are doing the job the way they would like for them to do it. When all of those things come together, we see what has been, over the last 3 or 4 years, a sort of perfect storm for sort of putting academics out there in the public to encourage the public's trust in us at the very time when overall public trust in our social institutions like government and education tend to be declining, or at least pulling apart by political ideology, oftentimes with conservatives having less trust in things like educational institutions than do people who identify as liberals or progressives. With all of that happening, the perfect storm has made it so that many academics, and not all academics the same way, have experienced some of the things that I experienced, either directly or through supporting some of my colleagues. And that looks like doing what your university asks you to do, so to engage with public, to try to work with your students, to give them a public audience. You might teach a course online, for example, or put some of your reading material on the internet. What can happen next, especially when you're teaching things that are not common for people to experience in their daily life. So that's things like gender or race or class or sort of these really nuanced conversations about inequality broadly. When those things are opened up online, where people may not have either the right or the most honest interpretation of the work that you do, there's now an entire machine set up to target you for harassment and elevation in the public sphere in ways that academics can't respond to.
And Trissy, talk about the form that takes. What starts happening to you or your colleagues? What are the first signs that this storm is coming your way?
One of the first things that happen is if you are engaging in public scholarship at all, and say you have a university contact, right, who has your contact information to offer you up as an expert to speak to the public, they start to become deluged with emails. Right? Or your university social media accounts will start to become overwhelmed with responses on Facebook that looks like tons of Facebook comments, on Twitter that looks like many Twitter responses and resharing of your comments on Twitter and other platforms. So that's your first immediate hit, right? You just start to see an uptick in kind of traffic. And then the type of traffic, the things that they're saying, right? They tend to be, I think most people would be surprised by how coarse and violent some of those comments and responses can be. You can see everything from, you know, just a critique of your work to a direct attack on who you are as a person to outright violent threats of harm against you and your family. So those comments start to roll in. The second wave is almost always with email and then phone calls to your office or your administrative office. So it's the idea of instilling fear in people. That tactic is old hat, right, to make people afraid. What is different is how large the response can feel, especially to a university culture where getting a few emails is considered excessive. When you're talking about hundreds, and in some cases for some of my colleagues, thousands of emails and phone calls being directed into your university, it's overwhelming, which of course is the point. The next step that a lot of my colleagues are experiencing, including myself, I get a lot of mail, you know, just old-fashioned postal mail. So handwritten notes, some containing threats, some just criticism. So I want to be fair that these are different categories, but some of them outright threats, and so they also come through the mail system. Perhaps the most troubling, third or fourth tier effect for some of the most public of these events is when those entities, internet people, these organizations and groups, are able to get politicians and your administration to take their claims seriously. So in some cases, that looks like, you know, partisan politicians in the state, you know, reaching out to the leader of your university to say, hey, what's up with that professor? What are they doing? And that can feel like a very implicit threat on your job security.
We're talking about racist threats targeting university professors. Tressie McMillan-Cottom is with us from Virginia Commonwealth University. Tressie, actual threats of violence. I mean, do you and your colleagues, I mean, do you get to the point where you fear for your safety?
Yes, you know, I sat down with my department chair just a week ago for our annual sit down with the chief of police, right? And I mean, I'm a professor, for goodness sake, right? I didn't sign up for combat here, but we have regular meetings to sit down and talk about whether or not my office is secure, how we're going to handle the processing of my mail, and those kinds of things. So it is enough of a threat that you can perceive that there's a pattern. And here's the thing about death threats. Certainly people toss them off, and almost always they're just figurative, right? Almost no one needs to actually come and kill you. The problem is you can't tell the figurative death threats from the literal death threats, right? And so this is what we see again about sort of that distillation and diffusion of fear, because there really isn't a reasonable way to handle death threats except to take them all seriously. When you realize that there are strangers out there who are willing or able to at least casually discuss killing you or harming you or your family, it absolutely changes how you can do your work and how you go about doing your job. It makes you extremely paranoid and uncomfortable, you know, just navigating the space of your campus. Most of our campuses are open for that reason, that we want people to feel welcome there. Well, when you are on an open campus and feeling like you're living under the cloud of threat, that openness can make you feel very insecure.
Does this make some professors not want to speak freely in public, just keep their heads down and do the job?
I think absolutely, and I think that's absolutely the point, right? One of the reasons why groups, not all of them even U.S.-based, I mean, this is all part of the same machinery that we saw at play during our most recent presidential election. You know, this is all part of this now ecosystem of building the perception of threat and fear. And so that's certainly the point, to make people too afraid to engage with the public. And here's the catch-22 for academics. More than almost any time in recent memory, we need now academics and professors to be in public telling people what we do, telling them what service we provide to the public and to the body politic. This is the exact wrong time for us to be too afraid to have those conversations with the people and the communities that we serve. But I think it's absolutely reasonable when individuals say, listen, the individual cost and burden, especially to my family, might be too high for me to be engaging with the public, and we all lose when that happens.
This is a global problem, an internet-wide problem. Do you see solutions?
So I'm a sociologist, so I always think about there's the big solutions, right, the big structural fixes, and then there are the things that people can do. And so ideally, I think both of those things have to happen. There's no way around the fact that we are, as a society, a democratic society, going to have to deal with how the internet has changed the way we communicate, right? So we're going to have to change the very systems that make it possible for people to target and threaten professors is the system that makes it possible for people to buy online ads, for example. It's the exact same system. So we're going to have to figure out that these things that we thought were really innocuous, you know, social media, are actually quite powerful and probably too powerful to not be legislated. So I'm in favor of government regulation, actually, for many of these platforms. Now, individually, I think some of the things that we're going to have to learn how to do in the new, you know, digital society and world we live in, we're going to have to become better consumers of the things that we read, news and information. You know, these things can be so slickly produced, the memes, the posts, that it can be very hard for you to tell what's true. But increasingly, we're going to have to know what's true because as a democratic population, we're going to have to weigh in on how these things are legislated. So we're going to have to become better consumers, teach our children to hold each other to a better standard of sharing information with each other.
A brief but complicated question, maybe. From where you're sitting now, do you see things trending to get better or to get worse when it comes to these threats?
Absent any of those other things that we just talked about happening, it is difficult to imagine things getting better by themselves, right? So without some political action, without individuals taking responsibility of how they use the internet, without universities doing more to protect their professors, our political discourse is simply at a place that we should probably expect this type of combative, you know, clash of ideas. But we can do things to mitigate the consequences of them. But without those things happen, I suspect we see things get much worse. It's much worse than other countries, for example. And so we know that that's possible. So I suspect that if we don't do anything, it will become a whole lot worse before it gets better.
Tressie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Tressie McMillan-Cottom. She's an assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University. She joined us to talk about racism on college campuses and threats and why she says that's a bigger threat than political correctness.